I'm reading from Mark's Gospel, chapter 4, verse 35. And the same day, when even was come, he saith unto them, Let us pass over unto the other side. And when they had sent away the multitudes, they took him, even as he was, in the ship, and there were also with him other little ships. And there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship, so that it was now full. And he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him, and say unto him, Master, carest thou not that we perish? And he arose, and rebuked the wind, and said unto the sea, Peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said unto them, Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly, and said one to another, What manner of man is this? That even the wind and the sea obey him. I want to share with you this morning some thoughts about what we have sung about and what I've read about, which I want to call the storms of life. Now, there were two storms at this time when Jesus was in the boat. There was a storm outside, with the wind roaring and the sea rearing its ugly heads and flooding the boat. A fearful storm on the outside. But there was another storm, and that was the storm which was going on in the disciples' hearts. A storm of fear and dread. Now, in the storms of life, what happens is on the outside very often. Circumstances seem to be getting out of control. Events threaten to flood you. You've lost control. Things are happening in life around you that you've never even thought about, perhaps, beating upon you, threatening to make you sink under the pressure which they are exerting on your life. And these can cause a storm, on the inside, where you become frightened, where you wonder what is going to happen next to make you sink beneath the storm which is raging. You become afraid. You might even panic. What is going to happen next to me or to my loved ones? Storms. They arose on the Sea of Galilee very suddenly, without any warning. You couldn't anticipate them. Otherwise, the disciples would never have set out on that sea with Jesus in their midst if they'd known there was a storm going to come. So it is. You are getting on with your everyday life. Things are going smoothly. Nothing particularly startling is happening. Then all of a sudden, the winds begin to blow. Events happen. Circumstances take a turn for the worst. You feel that you're going to sink. And this was the disciples. I don't blame them. I don't criticize them. Jesus was with them. But still they were afraid. And I would have been afraid in that boat on that sea. Because when you're out at sea, there is nothing to hang on to. Everything is fluid beneath your boat of life. There is nothing secure on which you can be grounded. You are utterly helpless, as they were, in a boat in the middle of the sea with such a storm. And when the storms of life assail us, they can be so bad that at times we think we shall never get over them. They will flood us and we shall sink. And at such times, it can seem that God, whom we've worshipped and believe in, is doing nothing. It can seem that he is asleep and not aware of our situation. You may want to cry unto him, "Don't you care?" As the disciples said to Jesus, "Carest thou not that we perish? Don't you care?" And we can come to a state in the storm that not only do we feel we are sinking, not only do we feel that God is asleep and doing nothing, that our prayers are coming right back to us without an answer, echoing in our ears and seeming to drown us. But we can also feel that God doesn't care. Of course, it's all right when things are going smoothly, when life is fairly comfortable and easy. We can pray with meaning. We can worship. We can take communion. It's all right to believe then that God cares. It's all right to believe then that God is listening. But when you're in the midst of a storm, then it is difficult. Sometimes preachers are accused of preaching theories and theologies and beliefs. And those sitting in the congregation or one or two can say, "It's all right, you standing up there," they can say to themselves. "But if you knew what I was going through, if you knew what has happened to me, even in the last week or the last few days, you wouldn't be so glib. You wouldn't be letting these things roll off your lips in such a way if you'd experienced what I'm experiencing." So I want to share with you just a little bit of what has happened to me that gave birth to this sharing, and to a great extent has happened to Rebecca as well, who has been my constant companion through it all. Life was going smoothly. My theology, my beliefs were not disturbed. And Anne said to me, "I want to go to Waterside Garden Centre to buy a piece of furniture. I've seen..." It was dark, it was winter, it was November, but she said, "It may go overnight." So I took her there and we appropriately paid for the furniture. Set off down King Street, a narrow road, country road, uneven, pitch black, not a street light, not a house, not a window. And I was driving home without a care in the world when suddenly I was blinded by light flooding through the windscreen so that I couldn't see. It all happened very quickly and I tried to avoid the light but smashed my car at quite good speed into whatever was causing the light, which I didn't know what it was. I heard a tremendous crash. Next thing I knew, I was in a ditch, the car on its side, thankfully strapped in. I'd had a terrible accident. The doors of the car wouldn't open. I turned the ignition off and somebody came and let me out, and then Anne. And it seemed we were Unhurt, we were taken to Peterborough Hospital, and after 4 days, although I was still in shock, and so was Anne, Rebecca, of course, was alarmed, we were discharged, seemingly more or less unhurt. But it was the beginning of the storm. We came out of hospital, went into Tallington Care Home, seemed to be all right, and the day came for us to come home when Anne collapsed at the breakfast table, fell. An ambulance was sent for. They decided to take her to hospital, so she was going to Peterborough Hospital. I was following behind in my brother-in-law's car. And as we drove there, suddenly I heard Rebecca's voice over the microphone in the car shouting out, "She's dead." It was totally unexpected. It was a tremendous shock. Very sudden. But the wife to whom I'd been married for 57 years had died. Most unexpectedly. So the storm went on. There had to be a post-mortem. The coroner would not release Anne's body. The funeral was delayed until into January, although she died on the 1st of December. And the next thing I knew, I had to go through a terrible police interview. Apparently what I had hit was a tractor, and the tractor driver too was being examined closely. But as far as I knew, after that interview, I was exonerated of all blame. But 2 or 3 weeks later, my solicitor informed me that I was going to be prosecuted for causing death of my own wife by driving without due care and attention. That hung over me for a month and caused considerable stress, and none of my family could make sense of it because Anne had not died of injuries due to the accident but of a thrombosis, which she was always liable to have because of a high platelet count in her calf, in her leg. It was only 2 or 3 weeks ago that Rebecca actually received a letter from the Crown Prosecution Services saying they were dropping the case. And the storm had ceased. So I went for 2 or 3 months through what I'm preaching about the storms of life. Couldn't have been worse. I was converted when I was 19. I'd had a wonderful life with God. But I cannot say that during that time, I didn't think in my heart, "Is God asleep? Are things out of control? And I feel I'm sinking, and I'm fearful." It's all right when things are going okay, but when the storms hit you, then your faith is tested, as the disciples was. Why wasn't Jesus concerned about the storm? Why did he upbraid the disciples for having little faith? Why could he sleep in a perfectly relaxed state through the storm? It was because nothing was out of his control. Nothing could threaten God's seat on the throne of the universe. He knew even all his time, even when he himself endured the storms of life, when all his disciples forsook him and fled, when he was arraigned before Pilate, the high priest, when his back was flogged until the flesh was on it no more, when he hung upon the cross, and maybe for a moment himself felt he was sinking as he bore our sins and cried, my God, why have you forsaken me? But everything was in God's control. Into your hands I commend my spirit. And his life became a great calm. So he in whom we believe, he whom we worship, has himself endured the storm. And so one can, through the storm, as I can't say it was easy, but often on my knees at home, I said, God, you are in control. Will your anchor hold in the storms of life? Can you believe that all is well? And I can say that, generally speaking, my anchor did hold, and I felt the life I had given to God, which was mine, was still under his care. And so, Rebecca, who shared this with me, we went through it all very much together. And I can say that people here prayed for me, the church here supported me in wonderful ways, even to the removal of my home 10 days ago, into being round the corner from Rebecca in Torkington Gardens. So I woke up this morning thinking about what I was going to share with you. I've been through a storm. I preach about it. Jesus has been through a storm. But I can say there is a great calm. Amen. We'll sing as I offer ministry, and this is not a matter of form. I honestly believe and have evidence that when people receive prayer with the laying on of hands, miracles do happen, either suddenly or over a short period of time. And so, since 1970, I have laid hands, and Anne has, on sick people, and have experienced their comeback of many healings, including here at the Free Church. A lady said to me, who I prayed for with a terrible leg a few weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, her words were, it's still working. I said, Jesus doesn't stop working. And you can come and receive the laying on of hands and believe for someone you know who is sick or in any kind of trouble. I did this at Eastbourne with a lady there who prayed. We prayed together as I laid hands upon her for a friend of hers in Switzerland. What a cancer of the thyroid. This lady who received the laying on of hands at Eastbourne rang her friend immediately after the service, and their friend said, I don't know what happened to me, but I felt a strange feeling in my thyroid. She named the time. That was the time when Elizabeth and I had prayed for her, And the doctors confirmed a week later that there was no cancer in her thyroid. It wasn't because I was a miracle man. Elizabeth, who received the ministry on behalf of her friend, believed together with me in Jesus for what I call miracles across the miles. So, as we sing this hymn, and as May comes and stands behind the rostrum here and leads one or two more hymns, don't hesitate. And if you've received ministry before, when I was last doing this, you can receive again. Jesus had to pray for somebody twice. When I was the pastor of a church in London, people received ministry several times before they were completely healed. So if you've received ministry before, don't hesitate about coming again. That's not lack of faith. With Jesus, things happen straight away usually, but I'm not like Jesus in character or faith, so sometimes it takes a little longer, more prayer. So we'll sing the hymn, "Be Still, for the Presence of the Lord is Moving in This Place." And we'll sit to sing. You make your way forward to the seats just there. If you would like the laying on of hands in faith with prayer. And believe with me in Jesus for a miracle for yourself, or someone whom the Lord has laid on your heart. So let us sing as John plays, "Be still, for the presence of the Lord is moving in this place. He comes to heal and bless and minister his grace."